Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Given to Him by S.R. Jones. Narrated by Marie Hawkins and Eric Smays. Prologue. 6 months earlier. Leah. The pavement is slick with rain, reflecting the sodium glow of the orange street lamps in this part of town. Something sinister fills the air. A sense of threat grows closer and closer. I hide in the doorway, unsure whether to stay here and hope the men pass me by, or whether to run for it. My heart is pounding so hard it hurts. My breath is ragged, but I try to keep it as quiet as I can. Luckily, the thunder is loud enough to drown out much noise.
"She can't be fucking far,"
a deep male voice carries on a gust of wind. Is this how it ends for me? In a darkened doorway in the rain, on a cold autumnal night.
"Oh, Julia, we know you're here somewhere."
The sound of my cousin's voice carries to me. Sick bastard. That he'd kill his own flesh and blood is shocking enough. What I witnessed him doing, even more so.
"If she goes to the police, we're in deep shit."
I don't recognize who is speaking. My cousin and his shady friends are all idiots, but dangerous ones. They might not be conventionally bright, but they have the low cunning of a fox and the builds of bears. Steroid junkies that work out daily at the spit and sawdust gym on the end of our estate. There is a working man's club, too, where they drink all day. Not alcohol, but Diet Cokes while they watch sports, play pool, and make their shady deals. I knew my cousin was bad. Ever since Mother and I had to move in with my aunt and him, my life has gone to shit. I didn't know how bad until I saw him and his friends kill a boy from a rival gang. And when I say boy, I mean a kid. He was probably only 17, maybe 18. The stench of his blood stings my nostrils still. A sharp metallic tang I can't seem to get rid of. I should go to the police, but no one from my area trusts the cops. They are leakier than a sieve, and anything you tell them ends up right back on the street. Glancing around me as I blink the water from my eyes, I see a neon sign across and up the alley, shimmering like an oasis in the desert of grim gray. The guys are still looking vaguely in my direction from what I can see, so I can't make a run for it. Then, as if God himself is looking down on me, a couple of female voices come from the far end of the alley, and the guys turn and start to move toward them. My heart speeds up and my muscles brace. This is it. Now or never. I take the chance. Head down, not even daring to look, I dash across the narrow alleyway, heading toward that glowing sign reflected in a puddle on the ground, and hit the doorway hard. The air rushes from my lungs on a whoosh, and I ignore it, pushing the metal bar with both arms and spilling inside the door into a dim, smoke-filled room. Two things hit me at once. This place is full of men who are in their 50s and 60s, and many are smoking, which is illegal in bars and pubs in England. It tells me this place is rough. I swallow hard, push my rain-sleek hair back from my face, and walk toward the bar. Head high, as if I'm not the only female in the place. There's no one behind the bar, and every male gaze in the place is fixed on me. Not in admiration of that, I'm sure. I must look like a drowned rat. Curiosity, though? They will be wondering what the hell a soaked to the skin 20-something girl is doing in their territory, I'm sure.
"You got identification, love?"
A woman enters behind the bar from a side door.
Yeah, 1 minute.
I rummage in my bag, my fingers shaking. God, I need to calm down. Finding my student union card in my wallet, showing my name and age, I slap it down. This isn't a nightclub, just a dingy bar, so it ought to be legal for me to drink in here. Anyone over the age of 18 can drink in pubs in England. She glances at it and then back at me.
"Are you sure you're in the right place?"
She frowns. "It's pouring down outside. I saw your sign and thought I'd stop in and get a drink." Her frown deepens. She's watching me closely, and there's something cold, reptilian in her regard. I shudder and reach inside my wallet again. Taking out £20, I put it on the counter. Brandy and Coke, please. Make it a double. I need the alcohol to warm me and chase away the panic. She doesn't answer me, but with one long, lingering look, she finally turns away and grabs an old-fashioned round glass, the kind with a long stem, and fills it twice from the optic on the bottle. She adds a spritz of Coke from the soda tap and hands the drink to me. No ice and a slice in this place. Far too seedy a joint for such embellishments, it seems. My stomach rumbles. Do you do food? She snorts. Crisps or nuts, take your pick. Bag of peanuts, please. She grabs them and practically throws them at me, the plastic wrapping skidding across the dirty countertop. I take it and rip it open, ravenous suddenly. I've been without anything to eat for hours. I was due to grab a snack when I got in from work, but I took that fateful detour when I heard the sounds from the garage. Blood. Knives. Laughter. Then screams. Nope, not going there. Not yet. I can't. Right now, I must focus on getting somewhere safe. I have money, at least. Enough to last me a week or so. After that, I'm screwed. Really, I need to get away from here. It's not going to be safe for me any longer in this dump of a town. Moram is a poverty-stricken seaside town that lost any glamour it held a long time ago. The seafront is run down, the pier a mockery of the days when families frequented it. Now the slot machines and penny arcades are full of teenage boys dealing drugs and drinking cheap cider. Crime is through the roof, and unemployment is rife. I always wanted to live by the ocean as a child. But when father left and my mom took us to live with her family down here, I soon realized it's not all I hoped for. I've been to lovely seaside resorts, places like Robin Hood's Bay, Staithes, or Sandigna. Moram is nothing like them. It's a boil on the backside of Britain, if you ask me. The woman brings my change and I put it in my wallet and zip it up. I'm gonna need to get out of here tonight, if I can, and get some new identification. Luckily for me, my best friend is a graphic designer who can make anything look good. She's already on the job of knocking something up and will message me as soon as it's done. She's also not asked questions, as I told her right now, I can't answer them. Once it is ready, I can print it off and find some work. I don't need something to fool the authorities, only good enough to get a shitty waitressing job for a few months and some digs. Where, though? Back up north? That might be best, but it's likely the first place my cousin Jeb will come looking for me. My dad used to say that the best place to hide is in a crowd. Would he take me in, even though he has a new family? Doubtful. He missed my birthday, so... Brighton, then. No, still too small. London. As soon as the idea hits me, it seems right. So many people there. Lots of new people. Immigrants, people who may not have the best identification, and plenty of places still willing to employ them. My name is Julia, but my middle name is Leah, and my father often called me that. If I use that, it will be familiar enough I won't get caught out not answering. And mixed with a made-up surname will mean Jeb won't find me so easily. A change of hair. It's in a long, bright, blonde, wavy style at the moment. I could grow the color out, let it go back to its boring, natural, mousy color. In fact, I can buy one of those box dyes for dark ash blonde and color it now, which will be better. Cut it, too, so it's shoulder length. Jeb and his mates will be looking for bright blonde, not dark ash. It's a dull, unremarkable color, my natural shade, hence me always dyeing it. As I've not worn my natural color since around the age of 12, Jeb hasn't seen me with mousy hair in years. Yeah, I'm gonna do that tonight. Get on a train to London, dye my hair, cut it, and print out my fake identification from Lucy. She won't say a word to anyone. I trust her with my life, which is a good job, as I'm about to.
She's here,
the woman behind the bar says to a man. I hadn't noticed him joining her behind the bar, but he's standing looking at me with a greedy expression on his face. He comes up to me, and to my shock, he reaches out with fat fingers and tips my chin up.
"Good eye on you, Sheila,"
he says.
"Very good. This one might be the best yet."
What the hell? I tug my chin out of his grip and scowl at him.
"Come with me,"
he orders. I shake my head.
"I want to offer you a job. In London. Not here, though. We can talk in the back."
At that moment, my phone pings and I glance down to see the identification has come through from Lucy.
"Do you have a printer I can use?"
I ask the woman.
"Yeah, but it's in the back, where he wants you to go. He doesn't bite, love."
She laughs, showing yellowing teeth, and it turns into a chesty coughing fit. The man indicates the door leading from the bar that the woman came through. I swallow, far too scared to go anywhere with him, but also terrified to say no. I need that printer. Sheila leans forward, her breath sweet, but in a sickly way.
"I'd go, love. You're about to be made an offer only a fool would refuse. You're not in any danger from us, but whatever you're running from won't be able to find where you're going, if you accept Mike's offer."
How does she know I'm running? She smiles, and for the first time her face softens.
"Seen young girls like you on the run enough times to recognize the signs, lovely. Go listen to what Mike has to say."
I get off the stool and follow the man, heart beating far too hard. The bright strip lighting hurts my eyes, but I can't stop myself from staring at the man opposite me. He's being friendly and has been almost kind to me. I have a cup of sweet tea in front of me and my newly printed out identification safely tucked away in my bag. He didn't comment on it, and in fact didn't read it, simply pulled it from a printer and passed it to me.
"I don't understand," I say.
"It's simple. You say yes, and you get paid £10,000 now. I can put it into your bank or pay you in cash. You come with me to London. Stay in a veritable mansion with a group of other girls. You'll be given the best food, pampered day and night. Have a personal trainer, and in a few months, you go on stage for auction. You'll be bid for, and you get 25% of the bid price, as yours to keep. You then spend a set amount of time, which you choose and specify before the auction, with the man who bids for you. He can do what he wants with you in that time, but he can't hurt you. No marks, broken bones, damage to you in any way. You'll be his toy, but his precious toy, only to be let go a few days, weeks, months, or even a year down the line. Physically intact, richer, and if most of the girls are anything to go by, with a suitcase full of fine clothes and jewels. Some girls even end up staying with the man who bid for them."
He wants me to auction myself off? Like an object. A thing. It's repellent. Abhorrent.
"This is the house where you will stay."
He shows me a picture on his phone of a huge red brick house.
"It's completely secure, guarded. We take our role as protectors for you young ladies very seriously. I do have to ask about your sexual history. Virgins go for the most. We had one girl fetch 200,000 once. I understand, though, there are few of them around these days. The less partners and experience, the better. These men like the innocence, you know."
He smiles at me, and it's almost paternal.
"Between you and me, you don't have to tell the truth."
I am a virgin, but I'm struck utterly speechless by this whole conversation. I'm also a dancer, in a strip club, or I was. If he finds out about that, he won't believe I'm a virgin. The club I worked in was very strict on the no-touching rule. I really did only dance. I enjoyed it because dance and music make me feel free. The power, the thrill the other girls said they got, not so much. I won't lie, some nights I would go home and touch myself as I replayed the dance over in my mind, though. If the guy was hot, which was rare, sometimes the fantasy would take a darker turn. One where he would take me and force me to do things. Most of the guys aren't hot, though. They're either college students on lads' night out, drunk, horny, and a real handful. Or they're middle-aged men sneaking out late on a Thursday night to get a titty dance behind the wife's back. They are mostly sad and pathetic, And if my husband ever did shit like that and I found out, I'd beat him with a frying pan. I'm not the most morally upright citizen in the world. I danced at night to pay for my college course. A course I recently finished, so I was going to start looking for full-time work. This, though, being a prostitute? Then again, I do the math. £10,000 would go a long way to helping me set up my business. I've completed my studies and have a dance teacher qualification. My dream is to one day open my own studio and teach kids. A few months in a guarded house is a gift from the gods in my current situation, and the money will help me move on after the auction part. I don't know, I say. It's prostitution.
No, it's not, he says with a soft laugh. It's more like an arrangement, you know? An agreement. Heck, you could say it's like old-fashioned marriage. You stay with one man for a set period, have a relationship, and then you leave richer. In the meantime, between then and now, you get to stay in a beautiful house with all your whims catered for, and you get $10,000 up front.
How do I know it's not a trap? You're not going to take me there and sell me into sexual slavery.
Because if I wanted to take you, I could, whether you want to come or not.
He clicks his fingers, and from the dark corridor behind us, two massive men materialize. They make my brother and his roid rage friends look skinny. I swallow hard.
This is my security team. There are four others always guarding the house. You will sign a contract. As I said, you get the first amount in advance, immediately. Trust me, people who are traffickers do not pay money to their victims up front. These men could take you this minute and put you in my trunk and no one would know. That's not what this is. It's very important for the men bidding at these auctions to know they are buying a willing playmate for a period. There are movie stars, politicians, and tech leaders bidding at these auctions. This isn't some grubby little enterprise.
His mention of the security at the house keeps coming back to me. If I don't do this, I'm either dead or hiding out, scrimping to get by on very little. If I do it, then maybe I can somehow get away from the house before the auction. Take the $10,000 and do a runner. It can't be that difficult. The guards will be there to keep people out, not us in, and I'm sure there will be a chance I can take. I must think one day at a time. And the immediate future looks grim if I don't do this. Even if I go through with it, he said the men can't hurt us. How bad could it be? I don't think sex is some mystical or unique wonder that I'm waiting to experience with my one true love. Being an erotic dancer has shown me it's often mundane, grubby, and a little bit boring. I've had crushes before, but no one has knocked me off my feet. And I've considered that I simply might be someone who isn't very sexual. I can either lose my virginity to some boy and find the whole thing completely underwhelming, or I can lose it to some guy willing to pay a lot of money for it. Money these men get to keep mostly, but I get a decent cut. How do you know the men won't hurt us? The ones who bid on us? He laughs.
Because one did. Once. Had a visit from Reuben here, who taught him a lesson neither the man nor his dentist will ever forget. The men know if they hurt any of you, there will be serious trouble for them. This is a tightly run operation. The man in charge is a stickler for the rules. No one gets away with breaking them.
The man he points to, Reuben, cracks his knuckles and flexes his massive thick fingers. Christ, I must be going insane to even think about this. Then I think of the cold and wet outside, and the boys hunting in the alleyways like a pack of feral dogs looking for me. Boys who won't give up because I could send them to prison for life. I have a few requests. My heart is racing. I'll be truthful with you. I'm hiding from my cousin. I live with him and he's been, trying to... I look down at the table as if hiding a blush.
I understand, Mike says.
He thinks I mean my cousin is abusing me. Good. I want him to think that. I look up. I want to color my hair to its natural color and change my name. I already have identification. It's what you took from the printer, but it could be done more professionally. I'll feel much safer.
Firstly, name change not an issue. We can even wipe some of your background, give you a vague one. Your cousin won't find you easily. Of course, it will cost some. Say 1,000 from your advance. That means you'll only get 9,000 today. Good identification doesn't come at a low price. Secondly, you'll be getting your hair changed anyway. This brassy blonde looks cheap, and by the time you've had a few months in our house, you're gonna look like a supermodel. I'll have to talk to the gaffer about your ID situation, but I can't see it being an issue.
So this guy Mike isn't the big boss. Will the gaffer, as you call him, be at the house?
No, you'll mostly deal with me, the guards, and a woman named Anna. The gaffer and his men stay at arm's length.
I stare at him, take a deep breath, and then make the most insane decision of my life. Okay, I'm in.
Chapter 1. Sasha. Since when did anyone think I'm a knight in shining armor? The sort of person to come to when someone needs to be saved? That is categorically not me. And yet, here I am. I stare long and hard at the woman in front of me, Miss May, a dominatrix from my past, hot, supple, and very much in control of herself and her environment. She asked me here for a meeting, and I came because we have history. We go way back. Back to heady days, or nights, spent in clubs in New York, where we both moved in the same circles. We even double-teamed a few subs on occasion, when circumstances demanded two doms. Then I left that life, bored of it, and moved on to the next shiny distraction. That's me. Restless. Easily bored. Being a dom isn't what most people imagine. You're not just directing scenes and getting your kicks. You need to always be aware of the sub's mental and emotional state. As May says, she's part kingster, but part therapist too. My penchant for being a bossy bastard remained, but the formality of the clubs grew old after the initial subversive thrill. For me, it was a game. For Miss May, it became who she is, part of her identity. She grew into it, and here she is, one of the most eminent doms in all of London. She's also someone I consider a friend, even if we don't see one another often. Then she drops this bombshell on me. She bought me a woman? It's utterly surreal. I'm still struggling to take this all in as I stare at her, as all around us in the hallways of the club ring out the faint sounds of pleasure and pain. Miss May has been sitting here, calmly telling me she's bought me a girl. As a gift. Purchased a woman. A living, breathing human being, the way one might buy a cow at auction. And is giving her to me. I can't believe what I'm hearing. She says it's to save this girl. It's the only way she could help her. The girl will live with me for a few months, and then she will get to go free. When she uttered these ridiculous words moments ago, my instinct was to say no, absolutely not. Then I saw the picture of the girl on Miss May's phone. I'm still staring at it, entranced, bewitched. It's like the creature on the screen isn't mere pixels, but a witch with the power to cast a spell on me with just her eyes staring at the camera. Delicate. That's the word that comes to mind as I look at her. Delicate. Like something that could be broken so very easily. Christ. I shift in my seat and clear my throat, suddenly uncomfortable. I look at Miss May as I pass the phone back to her.
Sasha, I'm not sure I quite like the expression on your face at this moment. You do understand that this is a favor to me and a rescue mission, but this is not actually me buying you a new fuck toy, yes?
I clear my throat again and give her a narrow-eyed stare. Of course I realize that. Don't fucking insult me. She's already explained the circumstances of this, how she found herself at a fucked-up auction, where, as well as sex toys and BDSM paraphernalia, they were auctioning off women. The women were there by choice, and get paid handsomely, it seems, for taking part. But Miss May thinks this girl was scared and second-guessing her decision, so she bought her for me. To save. as if I'm some saint who will keep the girl untouched and unharmed. Does she know me at all? She nods, her lips pursed. The look she's giving me is screaming,
"Don't fucking let me down. I trust you."
Christ. I've only seen the girl on the phone, and I'm already hard and aching. If I do this, I'll have her in my house 24/7. I mull over the information Miss May has offered in return for this favor. It's golden. It will give me a lot of power over my brother, enough to ensure he will finally give me the respect due in our organization. Okay, Miss May, I suppose the information you have for me and the leverage that this will give myself and my brothers demands a favor in return. I can do this for you.
Thank you so much. She's going to be delivered here later this evening, and you need to be here to collect her.
Collect her? Those words give me a sick little thrill. Beyond the worrying fact that this whole thing gives me a kick, there's the delicious chance to get one up on my brother. There are two ways this could piss off my brother, the great Nikolai Volkov. One, the information Miss May is trading for this favor will be my way of demanding an equal share of power in our enterprise, something which is long overdue. Two, the woman in the picture on Miss May's phone is astonishingly beautiful. Nikolai has recently lost his mind over a red-haired beauty named Sienna. He's married the girl, for God's sake. I get why, after seeing her. She's stunning. Nikolai must always have the best. Always. He normally gets it, too. Yet, I am the eldest. We love one another and are close, but there's a fierce and vicious sibling rivalry that runs through our interactions. Our other brother, Maxim, I don't feel that way about. He's far too different from me to compete with. Nikolai and I, though, we're cut from similar cloth. If I do this, if I take this woman as mine, Nikolai doesn't have to know I'm not touching her. No one will. I'll simply say she's my girlfriend, and he'll hate it because she's more beautiful than his precious Sienna. He thought he'd found the rarest gem on earth in that girl, but I'm about to one-up him in the best way. Fighting back the smile, I focus on Miss May. I nod. I'll be here. Wild horses couldn't drag me away. Now that I've seen her, I'm not sure exactly how much of a knight in shining armor I'm going to be for this girl. Miss May purchased the girl to save her and has given her to me to set free. I'm not sure it's going to play out like that. A while later, I enter the doors of Club Volkov, or Club V as most call it. The whole place is stamped with Nikolai's influence, and that's fine. I don't care about his shitty club and the tidbits of intel he gets from it. I just got us the most important bit of information our business has ever come across. And I didn't spend millions on a stupid club for has-been aristocrats and oligarchs to meet in. No, I was simply given a girl. A stunningly beautiful girl, and the information to propel our business to bigger heights landed in my lap. "Miguel, vodka and ice, please," I instruct the barman. One of the waitresses in the place swishes by. Pretty, great figure. Sandy, the name badge on her vest says. She glances at me, her eyes widen a touch, and her lashes flutter. I could take the edge off with some fun time with her. But Nikolai would throw a shit fit, and it's not worth it. I can walk into any club in London and have a gorgeous woman in my bed as easy as ordering a drink at the bar. Sometimes it gets boring. Nikolai scares women as much as he attracts them. Me? They think I'm all heartbroken and heartsick because of my sad eyes. Nothing could be further from the truth, but it gets me a lot of pussy. To be heartbroken, you need a heart. I am like the Tin Man, unsure that I have one. I used to believe Nikolai and myself were somehow defective. Maxim always had a heart, but it was battered and bruised so much, and now it's hardened and brutal. Nikolai, like me, never seemed to have much of one in the first place, or so I believed, but seems I was wrong. My brother has gone and fallen in love. Maybe I'm the only one truly fucked up? Miguel slides a napkin across the bar to me and places the vodka on it. I take a sip, relish it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?